Got Senator Jacobson on the line. Made it to your office. Things all good, and probably plenty of things to look over, I imagine. But are you getting to the point now where you've got the budget whittled down and got it figured out and ready to send to the governor?
We did do that on last Thursday.
Last Thursday,
the budget is passed and was sent to the governor for his signature or for his review. Way that process works is the governor does have a week to review the budget and then offer line item vetoes, and then any line item vetoes would come back to the floor and be debated on the floor. Mm-hmm. So that really kind of works fairly well, because you can have, on putting the budget together, you may find that you need to add something objectionable to the bill, to the budget bill, to get the full package passed.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it's the governor, he can come in and light item veto those items he doesn't like, and you need 30 votes to override the governor's veto. And that kind of plays a little bit in the favor of the conservatives, from the standpoint that there may be some things that got added to the bill that he may choose to veto, and then mm-hmm. the votes won't be there to override it. So we ended up with needing about $140 million out of the cash reserve fund, the rainy day fund, which takes it down to about 12% of annual expenditures. Point of reference, we've been as low as, I think, 3% of expenditures over the years.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a self-imposed minimum that we put in place, that we need to be somewhere, we think, between 6 and 12%. Mm-hmm. And it should be really, with the 12%, we feel like we've still got a strong reserve, and it's still there to go back to if we would need to. But we were able to do this without any tax increases, without cutting essential services. We did go into a lot of cash funds and remove money from cash funds to be able to fund the budget. And I was not in favor of two or three of the cash fund targets, and working now behind the scenes to really try to restore those funds to another funding source. So,
mm-hmm.
But by and large, I think it's a good budget. It had a lot of criticism, so it must be a good budget.
There's a lot of truth in that, Mike.
There is a lot of truth to that. We are, this week and actually today, we're moving to LB 170, with all the amendments that are being added to LB 170, we're doing this outside of the budget. In other words, we don't need this to balance the budget. But the bill, LB 170, is, if you include all the amendments, would provide for a sales tax. It would either remove the exemption from sales tax or add it to the sales tax rules. Several items that include pop and candy, although candy was removed, but would include pop. And just as a note of reference, if you go to a convenience store today and you buy a fountain pop, you will pay sales tax on fountain pop, okay, because it's a prepared food, okay? But if you take a bottle of, you name it, Coke, Pepsi, out of the case, there's no sales tax on it. I just reported, I can't justify it. So in my mind, sales tax on pop is kind of a no-brainer. In fact, I would argue that if you went to a C-store and you bought pop, chips, candy, you name it, and went and paid for it, could you tell me in advance which of those items are sales tax and which of them are not? And I would say the fact that you're buying it at a convenience store, you don't really care too much about the price. Because obviously if you buy it at a C-store, the convenience, you're paying a significant premium for convenience. right. Or you'd go to the grocery store and you'd buy a case of pop, and then you'd carry some with you when you travel, and a cooler. But who wants to do that? You know, so I will argue again that in my mind, we don't rely nearly enough on sales tax in Nebraska. And I know the pushback from the progressives in the body are that it's a regressive tax and it really hurts poor people. So this bill is really crafted to include a number of items that absolutely don't even touch poor people. Basically, it would be putting a sales tax on swimming pool cleaning. There'd be a sales tax on renting a limousine. There'd be sales tax. It would be a sales tax on leasing or chartering a jet. Okay, so far, stop me when I've hit something that is going to impact low income people.
Right.
Okay, but we'll still hear that argument how regressive this tax is or would be. I don't know where the votes are on the floor. I just came from a meeting, and I know there's 25 votes that would support the bill. I don't think there's 33. So there's going to be some changes to get there, and I don't know whether there's an ability to amend the bill to get to 33. But the general plan, if the entire bill were with all the amendments were passed, which would include a 20% excise tax on cigar products purchased online, and it would also deal with raising the cigarette tax. I've got a lot of emails on that. Don't raise the cigarette tax. But right now, Nebraska is in the lower, definitely in the lower third. Raising the tax by 64 cents, which is in the bill, mm-hmm. would really put us below the average. Still, the only state around us is lower is Missouri. I think their sales tax is 18 cents, or their tax on cigarettes is 18 cents, but that's in their state constitution, has been there for forever, and that's why they have such a low tax, because it's in the constitution. But otherwise, every state around us is significantly higher. So mm-hmm. So that's in the bill as well. The bottom line is that this should be, if fully implemented, would target $100 million a year in additional revenue. The hope would be to put that $100 million, and up to $150 million. The hope would be to take $100 million of that and put it into the property tax credit fund, which would be the Tier 2 fund. So it would basically be the school fund. The Tier 2 and Tier 2, Tier 1 and Tier 2 fund, the Tier 1 property tax credit has been on your statement forever. The Tier 2 fund is a new credit that you got this last year, and it's based upon the taxes that you paid to your local school district, and rural areas of the state do better, and we get a better chunk of those dollars because of the amount of property taxes that rural areas are paying to school district taxes, so property right. taxes. So it would help in that scheme of things. So
yeah,
that's where we're going on that.
Do you have a fairly good idea of what the governor may line item on the budget and send back to you?
I don't. I think right now there aren't any glaring items that stick out at me that tell me that this will be vetoed. But I'm sure there'll be an item or two that he might very well veto. And in all likelihood, with most vetoes, you know, he probably could have the veto upheld. I would tell you one other item we're going to be talking about today is LB 319. LB 319 is a SNAP bill that was brought by Senator Roundtree. The bill really deals with convicted felons or people that have served in jail due to drug offenses. Currently, you're not eligible to receive SNAP payments if you've been convicted of a felony for drug possession more than three times. So you would look at this and say that sounds like a fairly reasonable bill. The bill that he brought would eliminate that removal of the SNAP payments. I met with him on general file and said, look, in my mind, there needs to be counseling involved in this. And I know a lot of my constituents will not agree with me on this one, but if you spend any time around someone with an addiction, and a friend of mine does deal with an addiction, and I can tell you that addiction, drug, alcohol, all of the addictions, it's a disease. And you just simply going in and taking counseling doesn't necessarily fix it. It helps. It helps you set up the coping mechanisms. But if you're determined to be an alcoholic or a drug addict, you will be for life. And so what you have to do is every day convince yourself, and that's why AA is around and programs like that, because these are people that need ongoing help. And so if you're convicted of a felony for drug possession, for example, and it happens three times, you lose your SNAP payment. Well, from a practical standpoint, if you really understand addiction, you would look at this and say, we're trying to get them back on their feet again.
Right.
And if we require that they've got to have the counseling, the more counseling you have, the more chance you have of beating the addiction. But it is an addiction, and it is something that you're always going to deal with. That's a little different than, in my mind, a rapist or a murderer or somebody who did some other offense. So I voted to support the bill if he would amend the bill to require that that you would have to have counseling, mm-hmm. or you would not be entitled to the SNAP payments. The bill did pass with 31 votes. It was vetoed by the governor. The governor did call me asking me to consider reversing my vote, and I told him that I'd given my word to Senator Roundtree that I would support his bill if he included the counseling piece in it. He did do that, and so I like to think I'm a man of my word, and so I'm not going to go back on my word. Mm-hmm. My guess is he'll get a couple of senators to peel off. It probably will be sustained, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how many will hold on their position. But that comes up at 1:00 today, the debate over the veto override, and so we'll see what happens there.
Down to crunch time with just 10 days left in the session, so a lot of that is going to be devoted to final readings of bills, right? And anything coming up, you think, for people in our area that is kind of a hot-button issue, do you think, that we keep our eyes on?
Well, I have been watching the Senator Ivaugh's brand bill. That bill really struggled on general file. I originally co-sponsored the bill with the idea that we could amend the bill to appease the feedlots and still not do damage to cow-calf producers. When I saw that there wasn't a willingness to do that, I removed my name from the bill, and I've been opposing the bill since that time, along with Senator Storr. I would say that what I've seen is that the amendments that have been worked on aren't going to change Senator Storr or my mind. And the general file vote was short until Speaker Arch and one other senator went from present not voting to in favor to get it passed on to the next round. Mm-hmm. But at that time, Senator Ivaugh and the Speaker agreed the bill would not come back unless there was a compromise reached with Senator Storr, and at this point that has not been reached. In fact, she's really not been part of the discussions for amendments, so it's kind of hard to really compromise when you're really not part of the discussion. So she and I stay in close contact, and I'm not seeing, I think there are enough other bills to come forward that probably is going to go nowhere this year. I've spoken with a number of constituents that are cow-calf producers who do not like the bill. At the end of the day, I think a bill that would reduce the fees for feed yards but keep in place all the inspection requirements and the audits could make it a good bill and something I think everyone could agree to, but we're a long ways from that today. And so I think that's a hot button issue that may not come up again this year.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention to your constituents while you're with us today, Senator?
Well, I would say that in passing here, my priority bill was the cryptocurrency bill. Maybe should explain to people. I've not put that in my articles. I try to focus on other issues, but this bill did pass unanimously on final reading a week ago. The bill really started out, and what I'm after is that cryptocurrency miners use tremendous amounts of power. I mean, unbelievable amounts of power. As an example, there's a cryptocurrency mining operation in Kearney. That particular operation uses 100 megawatts of power annually. That's more power than the entire city of Kearney uses. Okay? So they're really hogs of electricity. Given the fact that we need more power. We've had some brownouts before. We get into summer months in the rural areas and we have irrigation needs then, and really up until we started getting some rain, we were running almost constantly or running the pivots early. And so pivots take a lot of electric wells take a lot of power, but they're making it for productive use or using it for productive use. So the bill originally came out that said we're gonna charge an excise tax on crypto miner users, and we're also going to require them to pay for any additional infrastructure needs that public power districts would need to be able to provide them the power, because I did not want to see that fall on the ratepayers to produce the additional infrastructure. Later, I found out that rural public power districts have significant amounts of excess power in the non-peak load period, meaning when they're not using it for irrigation, and they would really like to see the revenue they could get from the non-peak season. So I modified the bill, eliminated the excise tax, and really kept the requirements in terms of infrastructure, paying for infrastructure, and required that any cryptocurrency miner in the state would have to be on interruptible power, meaning that if during peak load they would be shut off, and there are no exceptions, and they would not need, and they could not be paid for it. So that bill did pass unanimously. The legislature had a lot of pushback in committee by the cryptocurrency miners, but after the modifications, they were still opposed to it. But we did get unanimous support on the floor. So I'm glad to have that behind us and in place, and able to be able to do additional in the future if we need to.
What percentage of the population do you think adequately understands what cryptocurrency mining is? I don't have a solid idea of what that is.
Not many.
Well, that's a good question. So let's take, for example, Bitcoin, which is one cryptocurrency.
Right.
Okay. So in order to produce a Bitcoin, you can mine it to produce a Bitcoin. And what we mean by mining it is you set up a computer and it solves various mathematical equations.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like three people get squared off and they compete to be able to solve this mathematical equation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are the one to solve it first, then you earn a portion of a Bitcoin. Okay, So when Bitcoin prices went up to over $100,000 a Bitcoin, you saw all miners, Bitcoin miners, expanding, and everybody wanted to get in the game of producing Bitcoin mines and be able to producing Bitcoins. Now, a Bitcoin or a cryptocurrency, in my mind, is, some call it a currency. It's really not a currency because at the value that it's at, nobody's going to trade, Bitcoin, except unique, very unique situations. That's different than a digital currency, where a digital currency like Telcoin or Stablecoin, those are backed by real dollars. And so a Stablecoin you can use to electronically move money on your phone, using a particular stable coin, and know that it's really backed by a dollar in an FDIC-insured bank. So that's the difference between a Bitcoin and a digital coin in a digital wallet. You don't need Bitcoin to do digital currency. So people get so on the digital currency or the Bitcoins, I should say, that it's just a speculative vehicle. There's enough in there that it probably won't crash, but it could, and it's not backed by anything other than speculation.
Are we going to have to create a bunch of laws for this? Do you foresee that as it becomes more popular and regulated more and more?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, people could argue that, well, the U.S. dollar is not backed by anything other than the full faith and credit of the United States government. And Bitcoin is basically the same thing, but it's not backed by the full faith and credit of anybody. Mm-hmm. So that therein lies the biggest difference. And they say that, well, you can move money quicker. Well, that's really, nobody's really using it to do commerce. I'm not saying there aren't transactions being done with Bitcoin, but it's, people are buying it because it's a speculative vehicle and a speculative investment. And it's highly speculative. And so that's why we're dealing with it. And now the price has gone so high, those that are out there mining it, they want to do it, but it takes tremendous amounts of power to run these computers. I might note that data centers run computers and AI needs a lot of computers. Okay, yeah. Those two are massive, massive users of power. And a data center would come to Nebraska in a heartbeat if we could provide them the power. Okay, mm-hmm. And they're pushing out other legitimate businesses that are actually going to hire people, pay property taxes, collect sales taxes, pay income taxes. The other issue with Bitcoin miners is I question how many of them are paying income taxes because they're paid in Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and are they reporting that Bitcoin to the state treasurer and the U.S. government? And it'd be interesting to have them audited to really find out what they do.
Very, very interesting, but I don't think it's going to be practical for most people for a long time. I think it's kind of one of those things that's out there. It's hard to really get a firm understanding of what it involves. You seem to have a pretty good handle on it, but hopefully we don't have to deal with it too much.
If you read the Bitcoin miners arguing against me, I don't know anything about Bitcoin. So they got pretty vicious when they saw my bill. So I must have found something.
You stirred up a Bitcoin hornet's nest, I guess.
Yes, I think that's right.
Mike, thanks a lot. Again, if your constituents want to drop you a line, they have avenues to do that. So give us your email and the phone number.
Sure. Phone number 402-471-2729 or M. Jacobson with an O at leg.ne.gov. I get a lot of emails. Many of them are outside my district, even though they say they're a constituent with their address is Bellevue. But if you put down your address, I kind of know where you're from, and I'll try to get back to you. Thank you.
We appreciate all you do for Western Nebraska to represent us. You do a great job, Mike. Appreciate it. Enjoy your four-day weekend coming up, and because of Memorial Day, we'll move our chat next week to Tuesday morning, okay?
All right, that'll work. Thank you.
All right, that's Senator Mike Jacobson representing the 47th District, Lincoln County, the four counties above, and about three-quarters of Perkins County as well.